Fuck.
People that are waiting.
Oh, well, we're going live without the little intro. I'm sorry, I've already started it, so no intro for this one. We're back. I guess we need no introduction is the best way to say that. But yeah, we're back. Ian, Dave, how's it going, guys?
Pretty good, pretty good. Not too bad.
Yeah, fresh off your trip to Udine.
Oh man, what an experience, what a match, what an away day. Perfect, literally perfect.
yeah, and Dave, good to have you back.
Yeah, man, it's good to be back. I mean, I'm sure we have two different results to discuss. The disappointing result against Bologna and then the match against Udinese. And I'm glad that Ian was able to come on with us today so we could actually get the first, like a first person's account of how it was in that stadium. I can't wait to get into it with Ian, man. It feels good.
Yeah. I'm glad that Ian's out and got to come back because it'll bring a little bit of positivity, a little bit of breath of fresh air into the podcast because we could be all doom and gloom. I'm sure that's not quite what everyone wants. I mean, it's fair to do, but yeah, we're going to try to keep it pretty positive here. I'm sure there will be some talk about Bologna and where Milan is now. But I do really want to focus on what Ian saw, you know, the energy in the stadium, the energy from the players, so we can kind of try to, you know, piece out what may come in the next couple of matches when it's really down to the wire.
So the main thing I would say is that Inter Twitter and Inter Tifosi supporters in the stadium are the different sides of the spectrum. It's on. In the stadium, it was an away game, first of all, but it felt like a home game. Like, I think over a third of the stadium were Inter fans. It was, honestly, from the Curva Nord, Sud, whatever, whichever one it is, I keep messing it up. They were chanting nonstop for 90 minutes, full support from them. No, the only thing they were booing, or any of us were booing for that matter, was Udinese, as you should. When Handanovic was obviously again taking a long time to either like kick the ball upfield or that, but you know, it's understandable. So
it's better him take his time than try to
rush like
rush like someone else that was in goal.
Rush than someone else. No, but yeah, earned that. Like, I mean, it was amazing. One funny thing that we experienced was when the announcer was announcing the Udinese bench, and the first player that he announced was obviously going to be the ex-Inter legend, Daniele Padelli, and everyone on the Inter sector was like, way, let's go, way, congrats. Like, it was so much fun. It was such a fun thing to do. No, but it was honestly incredible. Away days are something that I haven't experienced as an Inter fan. This was my first away game. And it was so cool. Even at the stadium, I didn't really feel any different than to a home game. Maybe it's because it was against Udinese. I know a lot of people around there also support Inter. And it really felt like at times it really was a home game. So from that aspect, it was chef's kiss, amazing.
Yeah. And it looked like you met up with a lot of guys. It seems like a very good place for Inter fans who aren't from Italy to travel to, you know, from neighboring countries. It seems like it's a very, very, very fitting place to have the Brothers of the World, you know, traveling.
Udinese is 40 kilometers away from the Slovenian border, which is converted to miles, 24.8 miles. So 25 miles for you Yanks over the pond. So it's really interesting because like from I met up with two guys from Austria, Simi and Lucas. Shout out to them, very cool guys. They came from Klagenfurt and somewhere else, I think Graz. It took them less than 4 hours to come. Me personally, from the capital of Slovenia, it took 2 hours, actually 1.5 hours to drive. I know Ante, shout out to Ante, Crazy Perisic. He came as well and he drove from Kirk, which is I think 3 hours away. So it's like for the everything that's east of Italy, it's a really, really easy place to go. It's close to the borders. There's Venice Airport, less than an hour away if you want to travel by plane there as well. So from that aspect, yeah, great place to meet up.
Yeah, that's awesome. I do want to ask, though, what was it like for the penalty? What was going on when Lautaro misses and puts it back?
I think Simi can and Lucas can speak for me. When we were waiting for what's going to happen, I thought it wasn't a pen from the stadium. I was on the opposite side of the stadium in the corner. I didn't really see it that well. I didn't have my glasses on. But it was, I thought he was trying to get a penalty or something. I don't know. It was a lot of time passed between when he actually decided to go check VAR, the ref. And I told to Simi, talked to Simi and Lucas, and I said, all right, like, what the fuck is this? Either go check VAR from the get-go or just play on. Like, I thought it wasn't a pen, so I said, okay, so now he's going to go to check VAR, and then he's going to say, okay, it's not a pen, and then we're going to go play again. And it's like, okay. But then he went, and then as he was checking the VAR, I kind of started thinking to myself, like, oh, hello, this is taking a while. Maybe there's actually something there, you know? And then he points to the penalty. Great. Cool. Who's going to take it? Because literally everyone is due to the penalties.
Yeah. And Çalhanoğlu wasn't there.
Here's my question. I'm sure, like, because Udinese Stadium is pretty modern. Like, it's one of the stadiums, along with Juve's, the most modern in Italy. Don't they have like a big jumbo's drawing where they show you guys? I've always wanted to know that, like, in stadium, do they show you guys like the instant replays that the referees are looking at, for example?
No, they have two jumbotrons, one at each end, not in the corners, but like on the, let's say, Curva Sud and Curva Nord. But it was basically running either commercials for water and cheese, or it was just like a timekeeper's thing. Other than that, nothing. Like, announced substitutions, all the usual stuff that you see, but it didn't actually show any VAR footage, nor did it let us in attendance know that VAR was being checked. So unless you knew, you saw the ref do this and run, nothing was happening. Even the announcer didn't say anything. So
that's interesting, because, you know, the Premier League, they put it up. It'll be like checking VAR for whatever, and they'll put that up on their boards. I mean,
or something, yeah.
Yeah. I don't think they show the replays. I mean, that would be interesting if they did, but I don't think they do that in English stadiums. Maybe they do, but yeah,
I'm not sure.
Yeah, but so all the goals were on the far end from you then?
All the goals were on the far end from me. Yeah, basically all of them, even the away goal. Yeah. The first one from Perisic from the corner, I was just talking to Lucas and Simi, and I said, like, we're getting a lot of corners. Like, it seems like we're not really pushing for the goal, but we're pushing for the corners, it seems like, because we weren't getting that many clear-cut shots. If I remember, I only saw... I saw the Lautaro one when I went to the toilet, and there's, like, a big jumbotron inside as well. So I basically missed the only shot on goal that I remember. No, but yeah, it seems like we were pushing for the corners. I saw the corner, and you know when you just have a feeling when the marker takes it, that's going to, like, just that once really connect well? That was it. Just connects on Perisic. I just saw it flying, like, rattled the sign netting. The away end went crazy. Some Udinese fans were in front of me as well. that was a fun experience. It was fun. Everyone was shouting for Perisic, you know. I think he's become a fan favorite. Even everyone in the stands loved him. I saw a couple of jerseys with him, even the old ones with the number 44, even the new ones with number 14. So that point of view, it was great.
Now, 14 Perisic is the legend. 44 Perisic is just some guy. But
it's the banter era icon.
yeah. The Perisic to Icardi guy. But I want to go back to the penalty. Of course, the lead up to it, we got that. But, like, when he misses and when it goes in, like, and then they almost didn't, like, give the goal. Like, I think it was called off at first for offside, which is, I think, a strange rule. But, was there a lot of confusion in the stands? Was it celebration from the get-go? Like, what was going on? Was there a lot of groaning that it was Lautaro even taking the penalty?
There was some groaning. There were some mixed emotions that Lautaro was thinking, just because as soon as he, like, the first thing that I saw, that I felt when I saw, like, okay, this is taking a while, this might be a penalty, was Lautaro going for the ball. That's the first thing that got me a bit worried, because we all know Lautaro's conversion, right? I think Opta Punjabi, aka Anka Sharma, said it's somewhere around 55%.
Yeah.
Something like that. It's not really stellar, you know. It's not someone you want to take your penalties.
No, let's call it what it is. It's bad, especially for as a striker. I think, I saw the post from Sharma as well. 4 out of 7, you know, 57%, if I'm not mistaken. You know, that's unacceptable, man. I guess yesterday we couldn't complain much because Hakan wasn't there, and I guess he's the next one up in the pecking order. But I don't know, man. I have zero confidence. Imagine going from Lukaku, who was automatic, and this time at Inter, who's never missed one, to Lautaro, where we know, like, at this point, he's very close to 50%, guys. Like, it's like a half and half type of thing. That's not good, man.
Exactly. It was kind of iffy, you know. And when I saw him grabbing the ball, I was like, okay, don't expect too much. You know, prepared to be let down. And then I saw him run up to the penalty, and I saw him shoot to the left, and I was like, okay, good one, you know, into the side netting as you're taught. And I saw the goalkeeper go that way, and I was like, okay. And then I see it bouncing back from the post, and it's like, God, not this again. And then I saw him finish with a header, and it's like, or was it with a foot? I can't even remember. And it's, let's go! We scored!
Well, yeah. Yes. I mean, all's well that ends well, you know.
Ian was having like slow motion reactions. Everything happened so slowly for Ian. He had the moment to have so many thoughts. Like he said, I saw him walk up and I thought this. Then I saw him hit it on this side and I thought that. Then I saw him miss and I thought that.
No, it's just, you know, what you go through as an incident.
No, absolutely. No,
time slows down when you suffer, you know.
The thing is, like, if you look at the penalty, like just that one penalty, it's not a poorly taken penalty by any stretch of the imagination. But when you look at Lautaro's season, I think out of those 7 penalties, 6 of them he went that same technique, same direction, and he had 3 of them blocked. You know, so at this point, like, guy, what are you doing? Like, I commend him. Like, he's never shown any sort of hesitation to take a penalty. He wants to take him in the big moments. He's showing that mentality that we want to see from our main striker, but we don't see what he's doing on the training pitch. Like, is he working on it? Is he like, come on? Like, I don't know,
man. Just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Exactly. I agree. But on the other end, I guess we can't be complaining too much because he still followed it up where he scored the goal, and now he's, what, 18 goals for the season? That means he surpassed his tally in the league. Listen, for the kind of season this guy's been having and for the amount of criticism that he's received, he's surpassed his season from last year on paper, at least, well, by the numbers.
By goals, yeah. I think he had more assists, but also working goal machine like Lukaku was, I guess it's pretty easy to stat pad a few extras.
Mm.
Yeah.
But speaking of conversions for penalties, I couldn't find individuals, but who do you think the bottom 3 in the league are for conversion rate of penalties this season?
I know we're in it. Yeah. So my players or team?
This is by team. This is it's just percentage of it's goal rate from penalties this season for the league.
I mean, I'm not sure if they count, for example, the one against Juve where Hakan missed it and had to retake it. Does that count as a miss or just because it's a retake?
I think that's just a make, because it's retaken. Oh, okay. Yeah, it's just you received it and you scored it or not.
Okay, I see what you mean. In that case, I remember 3 penalties that we've missed this season. So, yeah, I don't think any team could say the same. So, I'm pretty sure we're in that bottom 3. Tell me, where are we?
Roma have to be somewhere there as well. All right.
Roma are 15th. They've taken 7, scored 5, missed 2. So that's 71.4%. Inter are 18th, gotten 11, scored 7, missed 4. So that's 63%. Milan are below us. They've gotten 8, scored 5, missed 3. That's 62%. Really? And then Sampdoria have gotten 4, scored 2, missed 2. So they're at 50% at the bottom.
And we have our own resident Candyman Candreva there. Probably yeah. taking them. So.
Oh my God. he was another bad penalty taker. But yeah, I was trying to think of strikers with bad penalty conversion rates, and I can't think of many more that had or like Lautaro. I mean, I thought just maybe like trying to remember like strikers overall. I didn't think Diego Costa had a very great conversion rate for penalties. I'd have to look that up. That's just off the top of my head. I think I've remembered him missing some.
I mean, we don't have to look too far, to be honest. We have him right there in our team, rocking our number 9, Dzeko. This guy even refuses to take him. So he's notoriously bad at penalties. So that's a name that jumps to mind. Oh, and also Zlatan. Zlatan is bad at penalties as well for a guy that is as supremely talented as he is, as big of a player as he is. Penalties have never been his forte. I remember last season where they were having buy one, get one free penalty. and then Kessié were fighting over penalties, and he was missing a couple of them before Kessié became the definite penalty taker for Milan.
Penalties, man. I just think, like, the 4 that we've missed, and, like, I guess this is a little doom and gloom. Like, if we had made the one, if DeMarco had made the one against Atalanta, that's one that supremely comes to mind is, like,
bro, listen, we don't even have to go that far. We could just talk about the one Lautaro missed in the first derby, you know, right now we're in a position where we're hoping that they lose a match or they draw 2 because we don't have the head-to-head. You know, imagine what that would have meant had we won that first derby. So that would have been out of the window. It would have been goal difference and stuff like that, and we would have been cool. But, yeah. I've thought about it as well. Trust me, the DeMarco penalty, but especially Lautaro's in the first derby.
Yeah, penalties. If it comes down to that, I mean, it's
especially after Hakan took the first one and scored it so perfectly. You know, like why change it? It's not broken.
I don't understand why Perisic doesn't take him because he is quite good at them. He can take them with both feet as well, being ambidextrous or whatever the word is. And he has the confidence to do it. I don't think
he's one for one on this season.
Yeah,
but not even that. If you check his career, I think he's pretty much spot on.
Yeah, no, I remember. That's one thing that I wanted when we got that one against Atalanta for sure. I wanted Perisic to take it because I just felt like it was too big for DeMarco. But I don't know. Like sometimes I guess as fans we have to put faith in the training staff because I guess they see those guys in training every day. They see them practice it and stuff like that, and they know who's good at it and who's not. So I don't know, but yeah. I guess
see something that all,
you know. Yeah, everyone's been talking Perisic though. I just pulled it up real quick. He has taken 9. He's scored 5 and missed 4 in his career.
That's not good.
To be fair, he has not missed 1 at Inter. He scored the 3 that he's taken at Inter against Fiorentina, Frosinone, and Lazio this season. But he missed 1 in European qualifiers, missed 1 in the Bundesliga. And I mean, the other 2, maybe you don't count them too much. They were in when he was still with where was he at in Belgium?
Belgium, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Brugge. Yeah, at Brugge. One of those was against Thibaut Courtois. So I mean, I'll let him slide there. But yeah.
It's a slender man.
I think everything it all wraps into a bigger theme, which has been bad lack of luck, I guess. Recently, you know, we can't be on here moaning about we were unlucky or whatever because we've spoken about that. Like the other teams have had crazy injuries to deal with all season and stuff like that. So I guess now we're getting our end of the bad luck. I'm talking specifically about those incidents that happened last week. Within a week, you see Radu make that mistake and concede the goal that we conceded against Bologna, and we lost that match, where 1 point would have been golden for us right now, you know?
Yeah.
And then that same week, we saw, I forgot Fiorentina's goalkeeper's name, he made a similar mistake and handed Milan a win. You know, so it's a matter of us being on both teams being on the different end of the stick as far as luck goes. So hopefully, the last three matches, it doesn't come down to that. You know?
Well, you know, hopefully by then it regressed to the mean. I mean, of luck. I mean, luck's not a quantifiable stat, but yeah. If things are going against us like this and going for them like that, then I mean, this Milan team doesn't score more than one or two goals a match. So
Mikey, I know personally, I've been the main one on here saying, "Oh, they're gonna run out of luck. They've done this. They've done that." But they're still here, bro. So at this point, like, I do believe it in my heart, but it's three matches left, and they're still finding out ways. If you think about it, the last two big matches that they won, it's literally mistakes. Acerbi and
Marusic,
Lazio, whatever they were doing.
Lazio,
and then Tatsuro Rosanio, whatever his name is, at Fiorentina. It's like, what's going on? That's how they're winning the games. But
match fixing.
At the end of the day, it doesn't matter if they're at the game yesterday.
when they tried to cancel the goal, I was doing that. No, but yeah, while we're on the topic of penalties, I have recorded the penalty. If you want to show it, thank you.
Boom.
Does it work full screen? We will see.
Do you want me to put it full screen? Oh, are you talking about your screen?
Yeah. All right. Doesn't matter. Let me know if the sound's okay, and if not, let's roll the clip.
It's pretty shaky, but I'll see what happens.
I think the string quality makes it shakier than it was. I'll post it on the Twitter.
We'll get it on the Twitter, because that was a little anticlimactic, but
yeah.
Yeah, I was wondering if you
just
cut
off
when
we scored and heard the crowd.
Of course, I did.
Okay,
my bad. No, that's a preview. That's a tease. Everyone, go check out
teaser.
Go check out the Twitter account if you really want to see it.
Check out @botwpod on Twitter. Drop us a follow. If you don't, you'll be geolocked to see the tweet. So
geolocked.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of overheard. I guess Ian was trying to get us locked up on some for violating copyrights.
Oh yeah.
I know they would have been on us within a minute.
No, because video. This is not the stream. This is not the Sky Sports Italia stream. This is my own stream.
I don't know, bro. Oh yeah. I forgot you were at the game.
No more piracy.
We actually own that video.
That is a BOTW exclusive. Yeah.
We'll file for the trademark as well. Don't worry, guys. I'll post it to the account after the game, so you guys can all check it out.
Sidebar, though, you guys, I'm not sure if any of you guys are watching Atalanta and Salernitana. Like, what the hell is going on with those guys, man? Like, I'm counting on them. Yes, they're losing. And if you look at their form, I think they've lost four out of their last five matches, and the other one was a draw, 4-4 draw to Torino. So it's like they've completely nosedive. Like, they've taken a nosedive, and I don't understand. You know,
yeah, they lost to Sassuolo, lost to Verona, lost or beat Venezia, drew Torino, lost to Leipzig over two legs.
Yep. That's crazy. And I don't know. I haven't really taking a deep look at the table, but I believe they need to be winning this game and the next game so they could be in the running to be for a Europa League spot,
yeah,
right?
They're
so,
point out.
Yeah, if so they were to win this, it would be 1 point off for Europe.
That is crazy. So that means right now, if they mail it in, if they lose this match and somehow lose Spezia as well, by the time they see Milan, they could be already on the beach, you know, because I don't know.
Hopefully they beat Spezia and then have to go all in against Milan, I guess. I guess that's going to have to be our hope. Because, I mean, Verona is next, but they're in that sweet spot of being comfortable. So it's going to be I'm hoping that Verona is the team that can do it, because I don't really want it going too much further down to the wire. But I guess we'll see. The 538 Serie A projections that, you know, we've been using a lot these past few weeks have Milan at a 57% chance to win Serie A, have us at a 43% chance. So,
they took out everybody else.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone else is pretty much mathematically done. There's a less than 1% chance that Napoli and Juve do it.
I mean, the math still doesn't say that, but I guess I'll take it. But I don't know, man. It's just tough. I do feel like Verona could be the team that does it for us because they're not on the beach. They're not playing for pride or just to secure their spot or whatnot. They're still very much so in a run for a Europa League spot as well, right, Ian? Or at least a Conference League spot they could make, you know. So
right now they're 7 points.
Beautiful would it be for Verona to be in Europe, you know? So I think that they will be motivated against Milan. They will give it their all. Can you pull up the table? No.
I have the table. I can go ahead and pull it up real quick.
All right, yeah, do it.
Oh, yeah. I was just looking at it, but share screen. Give me one tab. And I want this tab. Yep, here we go. Okay, that's terrible. Let me zoom in a little bit. Okay, so yeah, Verona sit ninth. Better form than most everyone around them, especially Atalanta there. So, I mean, they're still in good form. Fiorentina have bottomed out too, just like Atalanta, which is interesting. Verona's still on the rise. They have a good, I mean, we've all talked about Juric. I mean, he's a good manager. Really need that. Really need something there. Because it's either we need Milan to lose or we need two draws because of the derby result.
No, Verona, actually, Juric is not there no more. They got a Tudor. Igor Tudor.
Yeah, yeah, Jesus. Yeah.
But he's doing
one below him at Torino.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Tudor is probably still trying to build. I mean, it's his first season there. Probably is going to want it to go to the wire to wire with his team, not relax. Like, he's still building something. It's his first year there.
Yeah.
I think it does line up pretty well for Verona to get a result, but if it's a draw, I mean, it only helps us marginally. It really needs to be a loss. Really needs Simeone to show up. Really needs something to happen there.
Mm-hmm. I'll gladly take a draw, actually, because I feel like the more they keep getting those lucky last minute wins, is the more confident that they are. So I feel like if they stumble against Verona, they
and
will
it's
go
at Verona.
At Verona in the Bentegodi, so you know what that is. You know, so if they stumble there, and they will go into two tough matches, Atalanta and Sassuolo. So that's what I would like, you know. But
can we really call them difficult matches?
Because it really Sassuolo are more difficult than Atalanta at this point.
It really depends. I think they're gonna show up, you know, because we know Gasperini. Gasperini hates those big sides, and he's gonna have his guys ready to spit blood versus Milan. He's gonna have them motivated. And who else? Sassuolo. Personally, I think that's wishful. That's more wishful thinking on my end because I was watching them get dismantled by Napoli last weekend, 6-1. You know, so I think there's got to be some kind of sense of pride that kicks in as a professional. You know, because everybody's written them off. They've been dragged in the press, like, hey, you know, this is what happens when mid-table teams already secure what they wanted, blah blah blah. This is what happens. So I'm sure, like, some kind of pride has to kick in for them to want to finish strong. But again,
they've won
like,
one of their last five. Ooh.
Yeah, no, I watched them lose against Milan, not Milan. What am I saying? Against Napoli and against Juve before that. And who else? I think they lost to Cagliari or something like that. A team that had no business beating them. So
let me check.
Yeah, they lost 1-0 to Cagliari. They lost 2-1 to Sassuolo. I mean, they didn't lose 2-1 to Sassuolo. Sassuolo,
yeah.
Jesus. They lost 2-1 to Lazio.
They beat Atalanta 2-1.
Yeah, they did beat Atalanta.
It's just what?
Like, it's what, just what also a thing about Serie A this season. I mean, we were why, when on earth were we supposed to draw against the, or lose to this Bologna team? When were this Salernitana team supposed to draw Milan? When were Milan supposed to lose to Spezia? Like, it's just insane this season because, you know, there's no great standout team that like can run this league right now. COVID has really wrecked everyone, and it's going to be a real effect. I think it's still going to be the next couple of seasons where the title race looks amazing, but it's because no one can step up and really snatch it and step on everyone's throats. So, I mean, there's still a chance as long as this season's going. I mean, there's going to be a chance. You know, I think Inter will hold serve. I think we'll win out. I'm not really too worried. Yeah. I think all the pressure is on Milan with a lot of kids who have not been there before. So, yeah. I mean, there's still that. And it, like what Dave was saying, if there's a draw, I mean, that takes the confidence away that, oh, you know, we'll find this goal late randomly. Like Tedeschiano is going to turn around and throw the ball in his own net or some shit. So, I mean, something, if that goes out and every match is a must win for them, I think that would really hurt them a lot mentally.
Yeah. No, I want to piggyback off of that. I think yesterday was, since we're talking about mentally, was a big show of mental strength from our boys. You know, I know me personally watching it as a fan, I know it kind of made me feel discouraged a little bit because watching it, just holding on throughout the, I watched every minute of that match. I don't know if our guys watched it and as they were getting prepared or they were just listening to the results or whatnot, but I know I watched every single minute holding on, and then I thought they were going to do it, and then just to get that whatever that was, see Milan win like that, not through them playing their stuff, creating stuff, but just to see it handed to them like that, it's kind of deflating, you know. So I fully expected them to really have a hard time against in-form Udinese side, who just crushed Fiorentina 4-0 in midweek before us, you know. So to see the guys come out the way they did, and us being up 2-0, and then, you know, of course we made the mistake late, but at the end of the day, I think we ended up just doing just fine. So I'm very happy with the mental fortitude that we showed, because that was really a banana skin for us to slip over. You know, we definitely find a way to move over that hurdle.
Yeah, I mean, our last deflating loss, the derby against Milan, it sent a tailspin for months. So to see, you know, the team come back, get the win, Ian, the support was behind them. You know, I think it's the best possible place you could be if you're in this bad situation that, you know, Inter are in. And it's not a terrible situation. Like, I hate to be that guy, but it could be worse. I guess I'm just hopelessly hopeful when it comes to Inter. So, I mean, I'm a little negative, you know, with my tweets from time to time. Like, but some of that is just to keep my own expectations low so I don't drive myself crazy. But I'm hopelessly hopeful till the end that something's going to happen. I don't think it's sealed. If it were maybe, you know, peak Allegri Juve or peak Conte Juve, yeah, you're like, all right, you know, that's it, wrap it up. But yeah, this is Stefano Pioli's Milan. Anything can happen.
And again, we have to remember what we've personally said on here, and we have to stay by that. And we did say that looking at the last five matches that those guys have, if they win all five of those matches, we're clap for them. They deserve to win the Scudetto. Right now they two down and they still have more to go. That's three, you know. So I don't know, man. Just mathematically, I just can't see them winning five of those tough matches back to back like that, you know. So, and we're starting to see it. Like, I think the first two that they won, they had difficulties and they needed some luck to be able to win it. So hopefully, like, it does even out for the last three.
Hope so, man. Hope so. But like, just some of the, I don't want to be that guy to start calling for conspiracy theories, like throwing the Mourinho gifts around and shit like that. But have you seen what Theo Hernandez did last game?
Yeah,
the elbow on Taya, and I've had Milan.
Did that did that affect anything? Was that leading up to a goal? I saw it out of context, so I don't know.
No, but like in any other sport, not just football, sport, in any other game, I think for any other team, it's at least a VAR check.
Yeah, absolutely.
A card. If and not, it wasn't a yellow card, a red card.
And it wasn't like something that the referee wasn't in the area or wasn't didn't notice. If the referee didn't see him do it, the way Touré he reacted showed that something was there. He was on the floor with his face rolling around. So at least do that VAR. When I saw the replay watching the match, I'm like, yo, this guy's about to get a red card. And to see that they just balled over it and kept playing, I'm like, yo, something is going on, but I don't know. Personally, I don't want to cling to that, saying like something fishy is going on or we're being hard done by. But yeah, I did find that to be a curious decision.
Exactly. And it seems like Theo Hernandez, of all people, has been doing slimy stuff all season long. And just, doesn't seem to be punished by it whatsoever.
He's embraced the villain role this season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I did the mistake of then going to Twitter to see what actually happened. And of course, we had Milanese crying, oh, but it was because someone else did something before and this was his way of compensating and something like that. And oh, Skriniar does much worse things on the regular and he doesn't get a foul. It's like, come on, it's an elbow to the face.
Yeah, they all responded because I had retweeted the video and they're all responding to me with the same argument. Oh, I know you see when Malé did it and Malé should have been sent off. Or what else did they say? Oh, Skriniar does that all the time. Or you guys just got a stupid penalty, stuff like that. So I'm realizing that in the midst of the barrage of hate that I've been getting from them and my responses, none of them is actually addressing the issue at hand. Like, okay, saying, okay, you know what? Yeah, I don't know what that was. Or yeah, that does look like an elbow. Or even trying to defend it. They are using the whataboutism. Like, oh, what about when Malé did that? What about when you guys, you know? So they know something is fishy and that's all I needed.
Yeah. It's always going to be like that, though, especially between rivals. I mean, I feel like we're never going to let the other have it completely clean, which, I mean, it just is in the spirit of sport. But, I mean, there still is some stuff that I know we look at. We look at Derby smiling after giving up the go-ahead goal to Milan. We look at, you know, Teo getting away with that. We look at whatever the hell Terracciano did.
Uh-huh. And Ikone, and another one of their players was in the Milan locker room after the match taking pictures with them. So I guess they had played together at Lille or some shit like that.
Yeah. So I guess he knew Maignan, I guess.
Yeah, he was.
Who had a good game? Fair to him. Maignan played great. Yeah. Made for a good save. Sure.
That one save on Cabral, I thought that was going to be it. But, you know, at that point, then a draw would have been golden for us. But it wasn't meant to be. But Let's not be too down because I do want to show fortitude and stick by my prediction. It's like there's no way they can win all five of those matches. So hopefully in the next three matches I start being right because I've been wrong so far.
Yeah. Let's look at some comments. Why don't we?
Oh, yeah, we've been rambling. We didn't even look at the comments.
Let's see. What do we have? Action-packed episode. What was a good one? I saw one that made me laugh. Oh, yeah. Sean Collins. Toro on pins is like Shaq on free throws.
The same thing.
It was so good. And it's true. I mean,
think about the Shaq on free throws being from Miami.
Hack a Shaq.
Living in Miami. Hack a Shaq. Building houses for the homeless with the bricks he throws.
Oh, my God. Matthias says Milan 95%, Inter 5% for the Scudetto. I think that's a little high. That's putting a little much in that Milan side. Of course, they are more likely because, you know, by the book, if they went out, it's theirs. But, I mean, that's not – football's played on the pitch, not on paper. So, what else? What's Risto saying? Risto, what – volleyball over us? Come on now. I don't know where you're at, bro.
He broke his streak. He broke his streak of only going on games we win.
Hey, it was still a week where we lost, so there was a loss this week, so he couldn't come.
Yeah.
So Verona need to beat Milan, or do you what's more, I guess this is kind of what's more likely, Verona beating Milan or two draws against Verona and Atalanta. I mean, both are very possible. You could even, I mean, what would be even better? I mean, two straight losses or a draw and a loss. But, you know, Inter have to hold serve, especially like looking at what's happening right now. Salernitana being up against Atalanta, that would draw Cagliari into the relegation zone. That would put Salernitana on 31, Cagliari on 30 or on 28. So, I mean, that would make that match harder for us in turn. Luckily, you know, of course, Empoli have done everything they've needed to do. So that's not too much of a worry at this point. But, yeah. I mean, yeah, Empoli next, then Juve in the Supercopa. That was earlier. Juve in the Coppa. Then Cagliari. So hopefully Cagliari's fate is decided by May 15th. And then
But they're in shambles right now, though. They just fired Mazzarri, and you know, I think that they won't be giving us any issues, regardless of whether they're in the relegation battle or not. You know, I hate to talk like that, especially seeing that this team has the capability of losing or shooting themselves in the foot to lose. But yeah, I don't know, man. That's why you guys see I've been more focused on Milan, man. I feel like our three matches, if we can't win those three matches, we don't deserve to be champions. So I give them that. I take that for granted. If anything, I'm more focused on Milan, seeing where they're going to drop points, because I'm already giving our guys the benefit of the doubt that they're going to handle business in the three matches that they'll be heavily, heavily favored in. You know, Udinese was the last possible excuse that we could
use. Yeah, like informed team. I mean, they absolutely destroyed Atalanta. Exactly. I mean, not Atalanta, Bologna, Fiorentina.
Bologna, we had excuses. As we saw, they haven't lost a match since Mihailovic had his issues, you know. And they've been playing for him. They're super motivated. They're playing well. They stay organized. So that's something that we could explain away. You know, Udinese, their form, explain it away. But we got no excuse to not beat Empoli, Cagliari, and Sampdoria.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you don't win those, you don't deserve to win a Scudetto. So
simple as that.
That is very true.
Can we talk about some of the transfers?
Yeah, I just want to – I have one more point I wanted to make, because it was something I saw earlier that I thought was kind of interesting.
Cool.
Emiliano kind of segued me into it with this comment saying Verona rolled over for Juve last year. When they were against Napoli for the top four. Forget exactly what happened there, but of course, Napoli didn't get top four, Juve got it, so I guess Verona did roll over there.
Were they fighting for anything at that point, though?
Verona? Maybe not. I mean, they're not fighting Verona. I mean, they have an outside shot at Europe, but it's not too likely, I don't think.
I mean, this result that we're watching right now, I'm sure that will definitely put a battery in their back.
True. That's very true. I forgot about that. There's just so much that goes into trying to anticipate what.
Yeah, so many implications, man.
Yeah, the math. But in 1990, Arrigo Sacchi's Milan went to Verona. I forget who won the Serie A seat, but Milan were in the driver's seat. Yeah, that was Napoli's Scudetto, and Milan were in the driver's seat late in that season, and they went to Verona and lost, and that killed.
I think it happened in the 80s as well against Juve.
Yeah, so just saying, this has happened before. Milan have been in the driver's seat.
Manifesting.
Milan have been in the driver's seat before and then had to travel to Verona. So
that's an Opta Mikey stat for you.
Opta Mikey, yes. It happened before, it can happen again. But yeah, we can go into some transfers here. Sean Collins asks, how difficult do you guys think summer will be with all of our expiring contracts? I don't know. It makes me more interested in what's going to happen this summer. because it can't just be, you know, a stand pat summer where you're like, all right, we have Vidal on $200 quadrillion a week, so you can't, we can't move anything because this guy's old and he's sucking our money dry. It's going to be interesting.
Actually, well, I think slash hope that our summer is actually going to be smooth this time around, as opposed to last summer where we pretty much got all got caught by surprise after winning the Scudetto, finding out that we have to pretty much cut the squad and stuff like that. I think we all, they've more or less told us that, hey, there's going to be a similar thing going on where we're going to have to make one big sale. And it's even more encouraging, I would say, because the last couple of days, I'm sure you guys have seen it, the rumors for a possible Lautaro sale have been intensifying. And the numbers I'm seeing, I'm liking 65 mil, 70 mil. We even saw Sky UK reported that Man U offered us 42 plus Martial, which is something I want to hear you guys' thoughts about. We could discuss.
When was that?
All in all,
was that offered like in the winter, last summer?
That came out today. That came out today, and and Sky Sports UK. So that's not a source that you could scoff at, I would say. But all in all, I'm saying this, like, it's encouraging seeing that, I guess, they're saying Arsenal are also interested, Man U, Tottenham. So that means that we might be able to have some kind of, a bidding war going on for Lautaro, which would help
drive
us
up some, drive up some interest and some money there. Let's see. Anthony Martial has done nothing at Sevilla on his loan. 8 appearances, no goals. I don't know. I see the idea there, but do we really want another striker that doesn't score?
No, absolutely not. But the thing is, it's like, it's so easy to get tempted in the idea of like somebody that has pace could be successful in the Serie A. But this guy, man, he's different. He's a mental case from my understanding. I'm not a Man U fan, but from what I know, he has a very difficult temperament. He's moody. He's like, he's the guy, kind of guy you have to coddle. So, I'd say no. Give me the cash. If Man U wants Lautaro, we're going to give him the same treatment that they gave us when we wanted Lukaku. You know, like, we're good friends. We respect each other, but this is our price. You guys have to pay it.
Well, I mean, also, they don't seem to like when Inter value their players, because remember the whole Ivan Perisic saga a few years ago. What are they smoking at San Siro? And now this guy is...
No, that was a dumb reporter that said that.
Yeah, yeah. But things like that, you know. But to be fair, we do have a good record of rehabbing Man U cases. Darmian... Alexis Sanchez, Lukaku. So maybe if it happens. Oh, Ashley Young too. Ashley Old. But I mean, it's happened. So I mean,
I don't know. It
could happen. I don't want to test it though. No. I need a real striker. But if this were a season where we still had Lukaku and they were like, oh well, you know, we're trying this, I'd be like, okay, we still have a real goal scorer. That'd be fine. But I can't do
so
it.
So what are you saying? You're saying that if we could somehow work out a deal to bring back Lukaku, you would be suddenly open to that deal?
I think so, yeah. But also, we have to be rational, and there's no way that we would be able to pay the wages of a Lukaku and a Martial at the same time, unless they're
Does he earn a lot like that? Like,
I'm sure he does. Just, you know, Man U tax.
Yeah.
I mean, just about every single Premier League player makes more than our highest earner. So I mean,
ooh,
it would be tough.
Atalanta just equalized.
Let's go. That's good.
He may have been offside from what I'm seeing. I want to see the replay.
Hey, at least they scored.
Risto has
illegal.
Yeah, Christo's chipped in, mentioning transfers. Matthias Ginter, yeah, we were linked to. I know that was a free De Vrij replacement that was being floated around, but he's just signed for Freiburg, which I think is a bullet dodged. I'll take that. So,
but just the fact that Freiburg can pull players that we're linked with.
That's fine. I mean, it wasn't a serious link.
Yeah, it's not like he picked Freiburg over us. If anything, I think it's been heavily reported that we're the ones that we feel like his demands have been too high, and we backed off. You know, so that's his loss, man. I don't even know where Freiburg is. So,
Mattia also says that he's scared of next summer, but can't think that far ahead yet. Yeah, I mean, one match at a time at this point. But it is at least to me, it's a bit interesting to look forward to, because there is going to be some kind of like mini revolution, mini retooling of especially the depth in the squad. And that has been a problem. That's been a problem even pre-Conte. I mean, he was able to paper over some of the problems with his tactics, and also, I mean, the short-term deals that we wheeled and dealed for him when he was like threatening to walk out, you know, like bringing Alexis back, Vidal in, Kolarov in. But those were the shortest of short-term deals. So I'm excited to see what's going to happen. I'm hoping it's like, you know, guys like Aslani that we've been linked to from Empoli for the midfield depth. Things like that I'm hoping for. Even Paredes as depth I would take, but that's wages and all kinds of other issues there.
Those kind of died down, those rumors. But, I mean, is it though, like, it seems like right now the only guarantee that we know for sure is that Vecino, we're going to let him walk for free. Vidal, we're probably going to have to do a buyout with him. Gagliardini is probably staying, you know. So I guess two out of the three deaf players. Maybe we could cast Sensi as well, because it seems like we're going to sell him.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it does seem like in the middle of the depth, there's going to be a big revolution.
Yeah, and speaking of Sensi, I was looking at the Serie A B table just to see who was coming up. I was looking with Ian before we started, and Monza are currently in second, and they have Lorenzo Pirola on loan. I know that they've liked and also have expressed interest in buying Sensi if they were to come up. So if those guys come up, there's a little bit of money to be made there. I think that would help a lot. Maybe, you know, this could be another piecemeal type summer where we make up the difference that we need with guys like Sensi, Pirola, Pinamonti, who has thrust himself into the limelight after killing off Napoli. So I think there's a lot that could go on. I think there's going to be a lot of moving parts this summer. I think it's also going to be the first summer where Beppe can work without, you know, a manager in his ear telling him what to do. Because, you know, Conte really had Inter by a leash at one point. So I think it's going to be interesting just to see a transfer guru like him work his magic over a summer.
I agree.
How about you, Ian? You agree?
I'm in my head, I kind of went off on Pinamonti. Because, all right, listen. One less goal than Scamacca, I think. And one more assist.
Mm-hmm. They're different. But he's shown that is his level. I think there's more in Scamacca as a player. He's not worth 40 million. I'm not going to go down that. But, I mean, if he's worth whatever he's worth, Pinamonti should be worth just as much. I will say that. But
exactly, from that point of view, you know.
Yeah, but I don't want Pinamonti in my club, though. Like
even that, I disagree, because I feel like that's – if anything, their Sassuolo's struggle for form as of late, that's helped us in a way that it will help us
tell their
president, like, hey man, come on, you chill out with those demands. Like, we're not paying you 40 million for this guy. Scamacca, I probably would say, is worth 25 at tops, you know, because hey, listen, he's older than Pinamonti. 23, you know, probably, I think he's turning 24 this year or early next year. So you approaching that age or put up or shut up, you know. So where we're still talking about a guy that's stuck at 13, we're talking about the potential, what he could be. Like, it's not like a guy that we've seen blow up the league and we know he's a killer. We're still talking about potential. So I guess that's why it's fair to compare Pinamonti as well. But the eye test, man, Scamacca still passes the eye test way above Pinamonti, in my opinion. And That's why we shouldn't get lost in the numbers saying that, hey, they should be valued in the same. You know, maybe if that helps us use Pinamonti as a valuing, I mean, as a bargaining chip, saying, hey, listen, he scored the same amount as Scamacca, and Scamacca just went for 40 mil, you know, for example. But in our heart of hearts, we know that it's not the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they're different players. Scamacca is a more complete center forward. At least his prototype, his look, is a more rounded center forward. And we've known Pinamonti for, God, I mean, 6-7 years at this point. Yeah. He's always said that, like, he wants to be like Icardi. Still plays like him. Still plays like him. Still fox in the box. That's what he's going to be. I think I've seen links, pretty decent links. I forget exactly from where, that someone like Eintracht Frankfurt are interested in him around 20 million. I mean, I'd laugh that all the way to the bank. I'd take him to Frankfurt myself for that money. So I would take that. I think there's a lot to do. I did see Mattia here. He does disagree a little bit. Says we have no money to spend and we have still another important player. I don't see us improving, only sustaining. I mean, on the surface, it does look like this. I think it's a very fair opinion to have, especially after the past couple of years we've endured as Interisti. But for me, I see the amount of wages that are probably going to come off Alexis. All hopefully, even if it's a buyout, those are off the books. I mean, he wasn't making too much to begin with. Ranocchia, I think we're talking about restructuring with Handanovic. Vecino out. Gagliardini, I've even seen recently, might be trying to get him out. Who's going to want him? I don't know. De Vrij out, Bremer in. I think that's, you know, the big priority. That's going to get things moving. There's just a lot that's going to be moving around. Even if we have to sell an important player, I see us replacing well. I mean, like we've seen.
I could definitely see us improving. You know, like let's just entertain the rumors. You know, let's play a little fantasy ball just for a second. Let's say we could pull off Dybala and some kind of loan for Lukaku, for example. I think that alone improves the team massively. And of course, that would mean that we sacrifice Lautaro and sell him for 70 mil or whatnot. You know, that along with the wages that we're clearing up and a couple bit part players should be able to satisfy the demand that Suning wants and then still be able to have some money to spend. Because the thing about the Bremer deal is most likely we're going to deal with them the way we deal with teams in Italy. Like, let's say he's valued at 25. We're going to tell them, okay, we'll pay you 10 now and five the next year, stuff like that. So that's how we pretty much balance the wage bill and the spending that we're doing. If Bremer, for example, a player that's worth 25 mil only shows up as 10 on this year's sheet, that's how we have to do. We gotta be creative, and I think that's what we're gonna have to do.
And there's I do like the rumor of, you know, Pinamonti knocking down the price for Bremer. I think that would be a great deal. Yes. Yeah, Emiliano also bringing up Kolarov is still on the wage bill. That's going to be gone. Radu, I think there's no way Radu can exist at this club anymore after what happened. So there's two more.
One thing you guys keep forgetting about football clubs. Here is my big brain from playing Football Manager for the past couple of years. In Italy, you have to have a certain amount of players registered to play that have been trained at the club from God knows when until 21. For at least 3 years, and that have been trained in Italy general for at least 3 years up until they're 21 years old. What that means is, even if a player is as poo-poo as Radu is seeming to be, which pains me because I enjoyed him, even if we still have, not this year specifically or previous year, but like in the past years, we've been talking about Ranocchia and players like that. These are players that have been homegrown coached by the club that fill out the quota, and that's why we also keep going for the Alex Cordas, for the Padelis of the world, because they don't cost a lot. They realistically never play unless a freak thing happens, like Handanovic injury, and then Padeli has to play in the derby. But that's one thing that we really keep forgetting, you know. It's not just buy players and put them in. You know, we also have to abide by this. And that's one of the reasons why I understand we still have Radu. it's also a reason why I don't understand why we can just bring one of our lonely goalkeepers back and have them there instead. So, you know.
Yeah, I mean, but the thing is we'll still keep Cordats. I mean, he'll take the role of what's his name that was here, never played, got through red card. Yeah, he'll just be the next Berni. So that's fine. You got him, you got DeMarco. If you have to, Sean down here is also, he's got a good point. I mean,
Agume, you got D'Ambrosio as well, right?
I guess D'Ambrosio was count? He was a Torino product, right?
Yeah.
Oh, he has to be somebody that we train at the club. Okay, I thought you meant.
So it's four players that are at the club trained and four that are in Italy. So that's at least eight players.
Okay. Well, I mean, Italian, we're going to be fine. Beppe has, you know, recharged with a lot of Italians. I think we're going to be fine on that. But yeah, I think it is interesting, the homegrown type, your quota that we have to fill. I think we'll be down to two. So that'll be DeMarco and Cordats. I don't think anyone else counts for that. I don't think
depends.
So
if we brought
Pinamonti would count. Who?
Pinamonti would count.
Yeah, Pinamonti would count. I mean, we have Agume, kids like Casade, the two brothers, I forget their name, the Carboni Casade brothers. Yeah, you got the Carboni brothers. There's a lot of guys that, you know, you can just also, you know, do a little bit of book cooking or whatever. It's not really cooking, but, you know, just throwing some names down on a sheet to, you know, make some clothes.
Yeah, even knowing that you're never going to play them. Yeah, I see what you mean.
Yeah. So it could be something like that. Satriano, I do believe, would count. Sean also asking. I think Satriano. Who the fuck is that? Satriano. That is also someone that, you know, they could do something with. Whether it's sell, I'd like to see him loaned back. I see a lot in him. I think there's a really good player in there. I would hate to lose him. I would really hate
to
lose him.
So soon, yeah. The fact that he hit the ground running so quickly in France tells you that he's one of those guys that has the natural goal scoring instinct. I'd at least like to loan him back, watch him get a full season under his belt before I decide if it's a guy that I'm willing to lose for Plus Valenza. But yeah, supposedly he already has plenty of suitors in France. Marseille likes him. Olympic Lyonnais like him. So those are teams that we could squeeze a 20-25 out of him. And that would be great price for a guy that we've never played, you know?
Yeah. I'd rather sell Agume than Satriano, especially with the market for strikers being as thin. I think you can find a replacement for someone like Agume. I don't think you could find a replacement if he turns into the player he could be for Satriano. And, I mean, Inter, you know, we're not the best developing club. So if you have a chance at this guy panning out, you've got to stick with it. Uncle Sharma in the house also with a good point. Van Huysden still on the books. I mean, he's always I mean, he could take the Ranocchia spot for last center back or the Kolarov spot of non-existent center back. So
yeah, shout out to Sharma. I think that's a very great shout. That's actually a reminder. I'm pretty sure even that was the plan, that well-known plan that he's there. He's coming to Genoa for a year, and then he's going to come and replace Ranocchia. I don't know, man. Has he played since a couple months? You know, we've been talking about him. We did give him a little shine the other day, but we were talking about his injuries, you know, and I haven't heard of him since then or seen him play. So the knee is gone.
Injuries. Yeah.
He's been out for the last 10 matches. Well, I mean, if you put it all together, he's missed 19 matches for Genoa this season. He missed 52 days with muscular problems. 19 with an unknown injury in January, and then he's been out since late February with an undisclosed injury, probably a knee, but yeah. I mean, if he's got to be there as a non-existent center back, that's all right with me. I mean, he would still eat less wages than Kolarov, less wages than Ranocchia, so, I mean, I think it's possible.
That is true.
Because you gotta save somewhere, especially with the way things are going. Mattia also with another question. What's going on with Barella's injury?
I can answer this one.
Okay.
So when he went off, he had to be helped off the pitch. But then as soon as the final whistle blew, he was walking almost perfectly normal towards the Tifosi. And then there was a video of him also after the match when the players go through the tunnel to the buses or to the airport in this case. He seems fine. I think it was more of a precaution as well. Maybe it was a mixture of a cramp and a knock or something.
Yeah, it was like knee to knee, right?
Or I don't know, bro. It looked like more than a precaution on the pitch because he couldn't even put his foot down, so it looked bad. But yeah, I guess the reports after the match were great. Like Ian said, like they said it was just a contusion, you know. So maybe like a big muscle bruise. They iced it up. I even saw reports today saying that he's ready to come back to training tomorrow. So. That's encouraging, you know. That would be a tough blow for us at a crucial part of the season, where not only do we have the Scudetto on the line, but also another cup in Coppa Italia that we're gonna need him, you know.
Yeah, I mean that was a big worry when I saw it, and I mean it looked very similar the way he was walking. It just gave me flashbacks to when he tore something in that knee, and it was at Torino. I remember it was at Torino in the rain. And he was kind of limping, and then he took a step, and it was just like you could see the pain in his face, like even worse. Like it wasn't quite that bad, and yeah, I did see the videos. Ian saw it in person, but I saw the videos of him walking around on the pitch, you know, like clapping at the fans, all that. And I also saw the report that he should be back, which is great. Hopefully Bastoni is back to full fitness soon too. Because if we face another tall center forward, I don't need DeMarco getting bodied again.
Yeah.
That was mostly to me on De Vrij, but we don't have to get too much into that one. But yeah, injuries haven't been too bad on us. But, you know, if it is someone like Barella here at the end of the season, that would be – I think that would be catastrophic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you guys have anything else? We're hitting usually our little limit here, 106, 107.
Oh, man, that's about it. Thank you, everybody. Thank you for coming. The usual people are here. Lord Figo, I see you trying to rob me. Nah, I'm keeping my gold chain and everything. Thank you for coming, everybody. You know, Forza Inter, hopefully on Friday we're fully focused. We take care of Empoli and we put some pressure on Milan. And hopefully they shit the bed.
Yeah. Perfectly said. Figo's trying to get my ring off me. I can't do that one. Can't do that one. I'll get him a matching one. Me and Figo can match. But yeah, Ian, any parting shots?
I just want to say Christo at the beginning said we need the intro at the end, which doesn't really work. So that's going to be an outro now.
This guy tuned in just for the intro, I promise you.
Yeah, he's telling me, he's like, use that intro, and then I didn't.
Then he dipped.
Okay, well, yeah, I'll go ahead and play us out then. Thanks, everyone. It's been a good one. Really appreciate
thanks,
the chat.
For joining.
Yeah, chat really kept us going after about 40 minutes.
As so always.
Much appreciated. And yeah, I'll just go ahead and play us out, and we'll see you all.